New York City is taking the next step in its life sciences leadership with Spark Kips Bay, a first-of-its-kind innovation, jobs, and education center, and we want you to be a part of it. New York City Economic Development Corporation is welcoming proposals from future-focused partners to help create Spark Kips Bay's academic, healthcare, and life sciences campus in Manhattan. Visit edc.nyc/sciencepark to get involved.
You're listening to Podgnosis, the pulse of the healthcare industry. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. In today's episode, we are joined by two journalists from the Fierce Healthcare team, Paige Minnemeyer, the senior editor of Fierce Health Payer, and Dave Moyo, a staff writer at Fierce Healthcare. Together, they'll dive into the most recent earnings updates from the largest health plans and health systems, sharing their key insights and the trends they've identified. Here they are.
Dave, great to be back with you for the regularly scheduled recap of the quarterly earnings blitz in the industry. To kick things off, can you just give us an overview of how things went for providers this quarter and maybe for all of 2023 and what trends you're seeing there?
Sure. In terms of a quarterly mindset, it's definitely continued improvement. I think that would be the big headline there is particularly volumes and demand are staying strong and improving over time, which is, as you can imagine, helping with revenue as well. I think there's a bit of that going on from a quarter to quarter sequential basis. And in particular, when you look at it year over year, Q4 to Q4, and also in terms of looking at the year as a whole, generally, we're seeing in financial performance improvements if you go from fiscal, let's say calendar year 2022 to calendar year 2023. Thinking a little bit in terms of profits and margins, I would say that the costs are still definitely elevated and everyone will be quick to let you know that. It does seem like, honestly, both for-profit and nonprofit is starting to get a handle on some of those expenses in terms of whether that be labor, the very unexpected spike in the early mid-year of physician fees, what have you. It seems like they're getting a handle on that. And for nonprofits that maybe were losing money or had very low margins, those have generally improved. Not all of them, not all of the large ones are back to not losing money, but there's pretty steady improvement there that they largely point to a combo of demand and performance improvements initiatives and for-profits, with the exclusion of community health systems, which seems to just be having a bit of a hard time in general, the for-profits are also demonstrating improved performance in Q4 and 2022 to 2023, I'd say.
And that's actually a great segue because I was going to say, as a reader, someone from the outside kind of looking at this, it felt like when we chatted about this in the past, we talked a lot about kind of the ongoing labor struggles and the impact of inflation and how these providers are rebounding from COVID. But it felt like 2023 was maybe a year of improvement and kind of getting back to, if not fully normal, a new normal at least for them. So how are you seeing that they are looking ahead to 2024 and maybe how they're feeling about performance now?
Just maybe to start with the labor component, I think that the general trend here seems to be they're still not thrilled, but nobody's expecting another spike in 2024. And generally, they're saying, hey, maybe wages are much more likely to follow inflation in a more expected way. I think we're seeing some projections where the executives on these calls are saying, like, hey, this is a bit conservative because we've been burned in the past couple of years when we are too confident, whether that be a bunch of contract labor, capacity constraints as a result of not being able to have all that labor on hand, staff the beds. Again, I'll say the physician fee situation that happened the past couple quarters ago, there's a lot of hesitancy there, but generally everyone's expecting those expenses to behave more normally going ahead. They'll increase by a small couple percent or so, but nobody is anticipating some kind of, oh my gosh, we're going to getting hit with a tidal wave and it's going to get worse, or we'll continue to be unbearable type of situation. And in terms of the other side of the equation, they're seeing demand continue to be strong, and that some of the volumes in Q4 were inpatient, outpatient, surgical. It seems like near universal in a way. I know that UHS noted that some of their low acuity acute care, which kind of went up in as the pandemic was calming down, that kind of went up as a lot of the deferred care of elective procedures or things that were generally low acuity came back that was being deferred. So then they saw their case mix worsened a bit. They were getting volumes, but these weren't very complex, highly profitable procedures that were being done. Some of that is also starting to mitigate a bit. So they're seeing some more of the demand that helps their bottom line a bit more.
When you mentioned this utilization trend, we'll certainly talk about this in from the other side when we get on to the payer segment, but some of the providers, it seemed like they were feeling like they were getting the squeeze a little bit from health plans as this utilization kind of normalized compared to the pandemic period. What are they saying about that during the earnings season?
There's definitely always the snide remark or two blaming payers for like, boy, we really should be getting more money here. And you even see it in the written filings that the nonprofits do, that there will almost always be a line being like, hey, things that were working against us were, we don't think that reimbursement is happening at the rate that it should be, whether from government or private. Or we'll be seeing a lot of stuff about, hey, our accounts receivable was unexpectedly high for a few reasons. But one of those is that payers have been fighting us a bit more than usual, bouncing back a lot of our attempts to get some money out of them. Generally, it seems like at least the heads of the health systems, hospitals seem to be thinking that some of that greater pressure that they saw maybe closer to the beginning of the year from payers is lessening a bit. And they seem a little bit happier with the types of contracts they're cutting, or they're confident in their efforts to go and secure payments for the care that they're providing.
And you've touched on the nonprofits a little bit, but I know they obviously report at a different clip, and their data looks a little different than the for-profits. Can you talk about any trends maybe that you're tracking with those providers?
I want to specify this is the larger nonprofits for sure. They didn't have a great year last year, and last year being 2022, and for some of them also 2023. Generally, they have the same upward trajectory. I think maybe they're starting from a lower position in some cases, where their operating margins were, depending on what organization you looked at, were starting to get a bit rough. And you could also see there was a year where their investments tanked and plummeted. Investments seem to be coming back to some extent. They're not, their bottom line isn't, oh my gosh, we're losing hundreds of millions and like two-thirds of it is because of our investment portfolio was in the dumpster. That trend seems to have leveled off a bit. And in terms of their margins, it's some of what I was saying before. They're happy with the demand and revenue they're starting to get. And then their costs, they're starting to mitigate. Almost everyone is highlighting that contract labor in particular is staying mostly low. And there's fewer instances where nonprofits and for-profits are citing, hey, staffing issues are affecting our capacity and our ability to operate to our fullest extent so that we can maximize the infrastructure we have to get stronger margins. I think the story actually isn't too different from the for-profit side. It's upward trajectory, but still room to go.
One of the other things that you mentioned that I thought was just interesting is that CHS is almost in a unique position compared to maybe some of the other for-profits that you follow. I don't know if you could talk a little bit about just the situation over there and what executives are saying about their performance.
Yeah, so they were the one that stood out. They had been losing money in recent quarters for a variety of reasons. I will say Q4, they did have a 35 cent per share profit net income. But generally, they had talked about some stuff of like, hey, we have revenue, like we have volume and revenue growth, but a lot of it is coming from the Medicare age population. And that gets you less money than your commercially insured population, generally. They are having some problems with accounts receivable, just in terms of they are overhauling some of their systems. They were having the similar payers are fighting us on getting our stuff back. They got, similar to some of the other systems, they got hit hard by the physician fee spike that happened, and they're working their way back from that. But generally, it's been a continuation of they're in a tougher position when you're looking at profit specifically than some of their larger for-profit peers. I will say a fun note that they also got to enjoy this quarter is they had a line or two in their 10K form saying, we're being investigated by DOJ, civil investigative demand. We got it in January. They want to know about things like utilization review, inpatient admissions, inpatient dialysis at our hospitals. We're cooperating. But I'm interested to hear a bit about the payer side of things. I get the perspective from what the health system CEOs are complaining about in their calls with the reimbursement and stuff. So it's always interesting to hear, hey, are any payers actually in trouble yet?
It's interesting, right? Because Q4 was a weird quarter for them, I think. But I'll start by saying, yes, they all turned a profit. Again, we look mostly at the six national kind of large carriers when we're talking about this. So all six of them were profitable. United Health, unsurprisingly, was the most profitable for the full year 2023. They earned $22.4 billion in profit, and they jumped over the course of the year. They've jumped CVS in revenue to be the largest company among the six. So not that surprising. So for comparison, CVS was the next highest in profitability for the year at $8.3 billion. So that's just illustrates how far ahead United is compared to the rest of the industry. They were one of the companies that was hit decently hard by the spike in utilization among seniors, which was the thread of Q4, really. But just given their kind of sheer size and scale, that was not going to be enough to really tank them in any way. One thing I will say, obviously, this kind of situation they're in now with this cyber attack at Change is since their earnings, so it's not reflected in Q4. But I think that will be an interesting topic to see the effects of when they report for Q1. And like I said, this is not impacting their financial reporting yet. We haven't seen the reports related to this, but their stock has been at a 6-month low since the cyber attack was revealed. So they've definitely felt the effects there. So we'll see how that kind of plays out.
Do you think we're going to get any like pre-earnings guidance or anything along those lines? Some kind of regulatory level of, hey, things are going to get rough, or trying to reflect that?
It could be. I wouldn't be shocked if they did that, just to get out in front of it. And especially now that they're in mitigation mode, they've figured out the cause of the attack. They're not investigating to that degree anymore. I'm sure they're still looking at maybe how they got in, but now they're at the place where they're trying to do what they can and do what they're able to do from their perspective to minimize some of this disruption that's going on with claims and billing. So I wouldn't be that shocked if we see a filing ahead of their earnings, just looking at, hey, here's where we're at. Here's what we've done so far and what else we still need to do. It wasn't a SEC filing, for instance, where they disclosed initially that they believed that the hacker was a nation state affiliated kind of actor. So they definitely, I wouldn't be surprised at all if before their call, we see a little more from them about this in an 8K or a 10K.
Speaking more broadly, I think we can maybe circle back around to some of the specific trends that you've been seeing. But now that we're talking about the potential Q1 impacts, any type of trends among the projections for the coming year from not just United, but the payer side as a whole?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of uncertainty. Again, Medicare and the utilization trends there was really the big storyline of Q4 and the end of in the back half of 2023 overall. And so I think for the insurers that are the largest players in that space, there are a lot of question marks for them as they look ahead, especially as we're getting into the bidding phase for MA, looking ahead to 2025. So I think there's a lot of question marks that they have that they're just not sure how this utilization trend will play out. Humana, for instance, was hit probably the hardest of any of the insurers with that trend, given just that their almost all of their insurance business is in MA. So that was, they're really exposed to changes in that space. But they put a really conservative outlook in place for this coming year because they just don't know what things are going to look like in terms of those utilization trends. So they basically said, we're going to be really conservative. We're going to expect that we're going to see elevated utilization for the rest of the year and kind of plan from that perspective. But if trends change and things look better, we'll adjust our guidance as we go. So I think that's really the thing that will be interesting to see is if they feel like they're getting a greater sense of where those utilization trends are landing as we go into Q1.
Utilization uncertainty and cybersecurity event, and surprises aside, is there anything within the trend that's, for looking at Q4 specifically, that kind of caught either you off guard or seems like it may have caught investors off guard that was shared over the course of the earnings?
Yeah, I think, again, that Humana's performance in Q4, I think really investors were not expecting, given that they had such a strong showing in the early part of the year when they revealed that they had bounced back with their MA enrollment and they got adjusted with a lot of the challenges they were facing. But that utilization really increased, really snuck up on them, I think. And so their performance at the end of the year, I think investors were not really expecting it to be quite so poor. It's not that uncommon at the end of the year for these plans to, even if they don't post a loss, they post less of a profit than you might see earlier in the year. But I think their performance was so poor that they really spooked investors. You saw their stock just kind of tank for a couple weeks after that. It was one of those things where they also tried to get out ahead of it and put out a long kind of statement about things they were doing and where they were looking at their performance. But I think that was really the thing that surprised investors the most.
Interesting that you mentioned seasonality. That's something that we see a lot of discussion about on the provider side. Volumes come in at different times of year. People get sicker right at the winter, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of the trend in successive quarters over and over is just that seasonality and trends of it's just generally returning. It's starting to become more of what we remembered pre-pandemic. Would you say that's somewhat happening over on the payer side as well? Or is there's just so much uncertainty around the utilization stuff still?
No, there definitely was. Seasonality was definitely a part of the conversation as to why it hit, all came to a head in Q4. The trend over the course of the year, and I think you mentioned as well that providers were seeing this, was that they were really seeing seniors come back for deferred care from the pandemic. So elective surgeries, orthopedics, outpatient care, or outpatient surgical care, those were all kind of the things they were trending, even from Q2 onwards. But in the later part of the year, we saw a pretty significant uptick in COVID infections. And as well as the MA plans all universally reported a large increase in seniors seeking RSV vaccines in the fall and kind of early winter. United's CFO John Rex said on their call that COVID-19 hospitalizations in December were up by between 50 and 60% compared to October and November. So that's a pretty huge spike in those infections. So that's an example of how they were seeing that seasonality play out. In addition, they were also, you know, they said it was a good thing that we were seeing this increase in vaccinations, meaning that seniors were more informed about their options. They were able to protect themselves against RSV, which can be pretty severe infection, especially in a vulnerable patient like a senior. But obviously, just the sheer volume of it was much higher than they were expecting. So that was also a play in the seasonality equation.
Paige, I know I still got a few nonprofits trickling out, but I think that's generally the story of what we're working with Q4 and leading into a new year.
Definitely. It seems like we're both going to be watching utilization trends as we move forward.
Thank you for listening to Pod Gnosis. I'm Ayla Ellison. You can find out more about this topic in our show notes at fiercehealthcare.com. Look for podcasts. And don't forget to tune in every Wednesday morning to Pod Gnosis, where healthcare is our beat.